this idea of someone driving a prescription to your house seems kind of maybe a bit foreign. So getting people to understand that this is a thing that can happen.
Welcome to Learning Life, where top experts share their business knowledge and personal journeys each week.
And the thing that I've realized, from the CEO to the NFL football player to the janitor, we're our toughest critics and we're hardest on ourselves.
I wanted to bring education to the market. I wake up in the morning and I am constantly learning.
The only way to grab somebody's attention is with a story.
Happy learning.
And now your host, John Toda.
Welcome to another episode of Learning Life. I'm your host, John Toda, and we're happy to have you back this week. Our guest today is Krista Peters, the training manager for Alto Pharmacy, a fast-growing Denver, Colorado pharmacy startup. At Alto, Krista's mission is to create a training program from scratch for a startup that's scaling fast and adding hundreds of employees each quarter. They all need to be onboarded and trained quickly while ensuring that the culture is not compromised along the way. Krista has done this before for Colorado Access, a nonprofit HMO that needed a learning program scaled from the ground up as well. So we thought it'd be fun to speak with Krista about her experience building a learning program and culture where one didn't exist before. We'll hear about lessons learned, best practices, and tips along the way that we can all use in our own efforts to scale up our own training programs. So let's get started. Krista Peters, welcome to Learning Life.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So Krista, I know you've got so much experience in building learning programs from the ground up, and we're going to talk a lot about that, but what I always like to begin with is just on your personal background, how you got started into this space specifically. I know you've got degrees in instructional design and distance education, so let's start there. What got you into this field in the first place?
Yeah, I think that through my whole life, even when I was in university doing my undergraduate degree and after, I really wanted to make change. And so I first started in social justice and political work. But even when I was in those fields, I was always drawn and always gravitated towards training and education roles, and did a lot of that type of work, training people on how to run political campaigns, training people on how to have conversations with people and change minds about the world around us. And then a few years ago, I decided I really wanted to move permanently into this learning development space and sort of out of that political world, but still wanted to make change. And so I've always had an eye to looking for companies that want to make change and want to do that through training. And as you mentioned before, I did go back to school because a lot of my background was in-person and instructor-led training. And I recognized that there was this whole new world of online development and online training for which I didn't have a background. And I really needed to build that up if I was going to be taken seriously by employers.
So that's a really interesting aspect of it too, because you were kind of trained originally and all of your experience was as a live in-person trainer, and you made this transition, which a lot of people are obviously doing nowadays, into distance learning and online education. What do you feel is lost in the process? How do you feel, you know, when you're dealing with individuals and training them, what's the experience like going from classroom-based training to the online world today?
Oh, that's a good question. I think that they're so similar now. And I have to admit, when I first started doing my master's, I was not a very excited learner about online education. I felt very alone, and I'd always been in classrooms with lots of people. I'm a very social person, so wanting to have classmates to debate with and discuss things. But I quickly realized that there's very few things that you can't do online using the technology and all of the things that are out there to be able to really build that engaging learning process. I think the hardest part now is convincing other people that it's just as good, if not better, to do some things online, that there's lots of things that can be recognized by doing online learning in a workplace that couldn't be done in person.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think it's so much the perception mm-hmm. of your trainees and management teams when you're going in and trying even just to get budgets approved to do this kind of stuff, and then to get the adoption. Are there any things that you've done along the way, any things that have really worked in helping, I guess from some perspective, this is the marketing of your online programs, mm-hmm. changing that perception, making people understand that this is as good as live, or it can be even better in some ways. What are some of the things that have worked along the ways, or some challenges that you've had in that area?
So I think the challenges are a lot of the learners haven't really bought into it yet. So they go into their roles and say things like, you know, I don't feel like I got a good enough training in one particular area because it was online. And so it's about setting up the learners to understand that, you know, we don't need them to go fast when they're doing online learning. They can still take notes and they can still go slowly and they can watch a presentation a couple of times. I think sometimes there's this feeling of with learners when they're doing online that they have to race to the end and be the first to finish so that they can show that they're really interested. And so really kind of getting people to understand that. I think the other part of it is showing the value of it to the company. So especially in a company like mine, where lots of folks are frontline in the field, rather than having to pull people off in big groups to be able to train them up on a change or something that's happening, you know, we can launch an online course and then the leads can really manage that process around having, you know, one person from their team do that online module at a time. And so it's not quite as much of a problem to the frontline work of the organization.
I think you're right. People in online education, sometimes the way they want to show that they're really good at it is by finishing it fast, which is not necessarily proving that it, you know, that they're getting all the knowledge. So now let's jump forward to Alto Pharmacy, where you're working now. And obviously, you told me a little bit before about how fast it's growing. Tell us a little bit about what the business is and how quickly you're growing, to give us some context on how you're overcoming some of the learning challenges there.
Sure. So Alto Pharmacy is an online pharmacy. And what we're doing is we're trying to revolution and reimagine what the pharmacy looks like. So one of the big things is we offer same day delivery of drugs and to ensure that you can get exactly what you need when you need it. And we partner with doctors and with patients, obviously, to have drugs sent directly to us. So you don't have to, you know, drive to the pharmacy and bring them your prescription and then wait for it to get filled. You can just go right home after going to the doctor. And then a few hours later, your prescription will just show up. So it's a really cool concept. And it's really about making sure that patients get the best price for their medications and they get the appropriate medications. And then also being able to screen just like regular pharmacies do to make sure that you're not having any kind of drug interactions or anything like that.
Are there other competitors? Are your main competitors other online pharmacies out there? Or is it the true brick and mortar pharmacies that we're all used to?
I think it's a little of both. I think that there's a couple of online businesses that have popped up really focusing on particular states. I think we're really have an eye to build across the whole country. And then, of course, brick and mortar. I think that there's some people that really, you know, don't understand, just like we talked about earlier with online learning and it being sort of new and people being hesitant or resistant about taking it on. This idea of someone driving a prescription to your house seems kind of maybe a bit foreign. So getting people to understand that this is a thing that can happen.
Yeah. And I think it obviously brings up the one of those challenges of really people understanding it and how you can build the culture and educate your own team. When you're talking about training for your users there, who are you training specifically on your Alto education platform?
Yeah, my particular focus as the training manager is on our operations area. And so that's all of our frontline people. So we have pharmacy technicians that, you know, just like in a traditional pharmacy, work and fill prescriptions. And then we have a team of pharmacists that I'm also responsible for training. And our frontline people, we have different groupings of people. We have a pretty hefty fertility business and we have some specialty drugs. And so we have different teams within our front lines that are pharmacy techs focusing in those different areas.
And so when you're talking about pharmacists, I immediately think of this whole nother level of training because of what you're dealing with. How much of your training, and it'd probably be cool just for our listeners to know the mix, how much of it is the technical hard skills of being a pharmacist versus soft skills training, culture training, things that are specific to Alto and your business?
So the good news is that our pharmacists and our pharmacy technicians come very well trained on drugs and drug interactions. They all go through hefty schooling programs to get there. And so my role is to train them on thinking differently about the patient than they may have done previously. So we have a value here at Alta Pharmacy of putting our patients first and not leaving any patient behind. And those are two of our pretty key values. And so teaching them about how we make sure that our patients are being taken care of. And then we have an in-house system that was built from our founders. And so training them on that system and training them on how to use that system and making sure that we provide excellent customer service, making use of those resources.
Right. So you've got a big piece of it is obviously they're trained in their skill sets as pharmacists, but it's how do you use your unique systems? How do you operate some of the values and things that are core to the way that you interact with your patients and deal with the end consumers? And now are you also doing leadership training and development of the organization as a whole as part of your training, or have you not gotten to that piece of it yet?
We definitely have a lot of that stuff. I think we need to really do a lot more building on that, but I've definitely done some leadership development work, certainly with my team and certainly with some of the leads that we have. And that's part of the growth of a startup is building all of those programs simultaneously.
Yeah, I know. It's funny to pick which is the priority. You never want to say something is not a priority, but it all has to come in time. And so our listeners know, just tell us quickly about how many people are at Alto now and how quickly are you growing? Because I know your growth plans over the next year or so are pretty pretty ambitious.
Yeah, I mean, I started here in Alto in April, and I think there were about 150 people total working in Alto Pharmacy, and that includes, you know, human resources, front lines, accounting, all of that kind of stuff. And now we're over 400 people. Here we are in January, so not quite a year later since I've joined. And our plan is, at least for my area, to add a few hundred more by the end of the year. So I think that the last numbers were, you know, 400 or 500 people. So big growth for the year of 2020.
Hey, listeners, are you looking to create engaging learning that takes place anywhere on any device at any time? Look no further than eLearning Brothers, the leader in immersive e-learning solutions. What started out over a decade ago with amazing e-learning templates has now grown into a learning powerhouse that can help you with every aspect of your learning and development programs. Whether you need the tools to create and enhance your own learning programs or a partner to develop custom content and deliver it through an engaging learner experience, they'll help you rock it all. Right now, virtual learning is critical to all of our growing businesses, and the team at eLearning Brothers is literally the best in the business. Check out eLearningBrothers.com today and see all the ways they can help you become an e-learning rock star. Now back to the show. So it's kind of like your sweet spot in the L&D space. What do you do for anybody who's out there listening and they're in that same position where they've been brought into a startup or a fast-growing phase of a company and their job is to build out learning systems? Can you give us a couple of the tips? Like, where did you start? What was the first thing you did to start to roadmap this out? How did you get the buy-in and alignment along all the stakeholders at the company?
Right. So I kind of have four different areas that I look at. So the first one is about relationships. And I think that anybody who's in this learning development space recognizes that if you aren't able to build relationships with people, you're never going to be successful. And so, and that's a couple of different types of leadership or relationship building rather. It's, with the learners. So lots of people don't like attending classes. It's a bit uncomfortable. So making people understand the role you're playing. In places where there's nothing before, people haven't been used to going to classes or doing online learning, and so getting them into that space. I think there's also, especially in a startup, a culture of busy, where it's, you know, I don't have time to, if I'm in a classroom, I'm not doing the frontline work, and we're not putting our patients first. So working around that and building relationships so that people understand, I can take 10 minutes off the front lines to take this class, and that's going to help me in the long run. Relationships with leadership, there needs to be an outcome. So explaining to them how you think the program is going to benefit the company and being able to see value for dollar, especially when you have to invest like we did when I first got here in technology and systems, making sure that they understand how that's going to come back to them. What's their return on investment for putting in those dollars up front? And then we've talked about this a bit, but how you sell people on online learning. So I actually expected that even in a startup, because, you know, it's innovative and technology, that it wouldn't be as big a sell to sell people on online learning. But I think there is this We don't want to lose touch points with people. We want to, you know, build those relationships, and they feel like maybe that doesn't happen with online. So showing them that the online learning can work.
For you, what was the hardest one, or the one that you needed to focus on first and foremost before you could get things off the ground?
I think that it was getting used to the system myself that we use, the proprietary system, and then, you know, figuring out what we needed to teach, figuring out what already had existed. So there was a training team. There was a bunch of folks that had been chosen from the front lines, exceptional employees who were doing the training. And so, you know, again, without relationships, building relationships with them to show them how to be instructional designers and invest in them. So I did do some work around coaching them. I sent them to some courses. I gave them some training on the technology. And I mean, to be honest, the beauty of working with mostly millennials here, you know, I know people are hard on millennials sometimes, but that was actually one of the best parts, was handing them pieces of technology and then being able to pick them up, you know, very, very quick. So I think that was, you know, really developing that team and learning the software myself so I could talk the talk with my team and making sure that they knew what we needed to get across to the learner.
You started first with your subject matter experts, getting their buy-in because you needed them to help create the actual content that you were going to use for your training. So your training program really began on the authoring side. How much time do you spend on the technology? Did you have an authoring tool already, or did you allow them to have some involvement in the selection of that? And then when did you get into like technology, like the platform and all of that? Was that the very next thing you do?
I went to the team and explained some of the technology that we could use to develop online. There was very little online here at all. There was, you know, some PDFs that people would read and kind of, you know, check mark that they had read them. But there was really no online, you know, sort of learning management system type stuff. So it was about showing them the different options. We definitely, there aren't a lot of authoring tools. So choosing one and then training them on how to use it, getting the learning management system set up, that was key. And like I said, I was really impressed. I didn't actually have to train them. I feel like they probably spent more time training me on the system we use to fill prescriptions than I did on training them on how to use like Articulate Storyline, Camtasia, the learning management system, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's funny, right? It's and I think you said it right. Like everyone complains about millennials, but I think they'll look back and say, yeah, one of the things we took for granted is that they learn technology so quickly. You know, it makes makes your life easier. Now, how many subject matter experts do you have there creating new content? And then what's your process look like? Do they create it and publish it to you, and then you do the final QA before it becomes a course that's available for other users, or are they directly posting content into the LMS?
Yeah, it really varies. So I currently have a team of four that will likely grow as we grow this year. In terms of the process to develop content, so depending on if the person on my team is the subject matter expert on that particular piece, or if they have to go find a subject matter expert, you know, doing the needs analysis, that kind of thing. So if they are the subject matter expert, they'll build the content and then I'll look at it for the learning side. And I might not know the subject matter, so I trust that they have, you know, put the subject matter appropriately. If they've gone to a subject matter expert elsewhere in the company and they're building the content as an instructional designer, then both me and the subject matter expert will look at it to make sure it's correct. And also, I have to admit, the rest of the team really looks at it too. They've become very skilled instructional designers in the last 9 months. And so I do count on them to share work amongst them and to provide feedback to each other.
Wow, that's awesome. And now when you look at your team creating content going forward, what are some things that you will improve on, change, or try to implement or add to the model going forward to improve the library of content?
It's like you were sitting in the meeting I just had. So I think that now that we have a team, now that people are getting better at the technology, we want to increase the technology. So I think our big looks for this year are video protection. We have Camtasia, but I don't think we've been using it to you know, the effect or to the amount that we need to. So having some of our team members go through training on Camtasia and being able to use videos more than just like your sort of articulate click through type stuff. And then also improving the articulate so that it's not just click through and that it's more engaging. And we've also been looking at gamification. I was listening to one of your episodes and, you know, figuring out how we can use gamification as part of our process to make learning a little bit more interesting and fun, and whether or not we can build that or if that's something we need to sort of buy. And that's certainly been front of mind for us. Like, what can we buy? Are there templates we can buy? Are there games we can already buy that are built and then customize them for our needs? Or do we need to actually learn how to build those things ourselves?
The other question I have for you, we talked a little bit about leadership development and some of those areas. When you're thinking about categories of content that you like on your wish list of things that you want to be able to develop in year two, year three of your plan there, what does it look like? What are some of the categories of content that you'd love to be able to train outside of the stuff you must do, the required stuff like mm-hmm. your platform and how to treat a patient? What's on your wish list of things you'd love to be able to do if you had the time and the budget for it?
I think leadership development is huge, is a big area of interest for me. I love training it, and I see so much potential in the people around. And I think that the beauty of the people that are drawn to startups is that people are drawn to startups because they like things that change quickly, they like being innovative, and they like the opportunity to move into new roles. And so I love the idea of having leadership development. We already have started crafting, our people team has started crafting career pathing for folks. And so how do we set up people to make sure that they're able to career path effectively? And I think, you know, some of it is traditional stuff. I think that, you know, having tough conversations is going to be huge. I think questions around coaching, how do we have coaching conversations with folks that we're leading around making sure that their career is respected and grown. And I think that a traditional learning or leadership development program would be huge.
Yeah, I love that. Just your whole topic of career pathing. Mm-hmm. I've been like on that soap. That's like I'm on that soapbox. Mm-hmm. And I think not enough companies do it. That's awesome. You guys are doing that. And that kind of brings me to my final topic. Adoption is always a challenge for everyone. Mm-hmm. What are some things that have worked for you in getting adoption of online education? As we know, that's always challenging to get people to want to log in and learn.
Mm-hmm. I think that the biggest things are, so first of all, providing data. So being able to show how many people have taken courses, how maybe there's a problem that has been existing in the company, and after we've been able to launch a program, we can now show that the mistakes on that particular thing have gone away, and it's because we were able to do that online course or that course. So I think data is huge. Data is huge here at Alto Pharmacy. It's, we need to prove that the courses are working, getting people ramped into their roles, making sure that they're not making mistakes. It really is one of those situations that if you do make a mistake, someone can get really sick and potentially even die. So we need to make sure that we're being very, very, very good at our jobs.
How much in your world is it realistic to gamify it, have leaderboards, have people kind of driving their own adoption based on how they rank against other people's knowledge level? Is that something that you see possibly having a place in Alto's training strategy?
Yeah, I'm not sure that we believe in sort of, you know, competing against one another or ranking against one another, but I think the gamification is a good way for people to remember things, right? So using quizzing, we do have a lot of quizzing right now built in, but it's your sort of traditional test. And I think that sometimes those can get a little boring. So I don't have a situation where we're going to like pit one person against the other. Maybe if we do like a team game or something, but what we really want to do is make it fun so that people can learn and then retain the information. And I also really tell our folks, we don't want you to memorize every aspect of your job. That's impossible. But what we do want you to do is memorize where you can find answers to the questions that you have. So what are all of those different resources? We talk about making people, detectives and finding that piece of information that you need. I think that's really where we're going there.
Yeah, I like that too. And I think some people they look at it differently. They look at gamifying the approach and the leaderboards and all that of driving, whether they do it group-based or individual, it just changes the focus of the learning and makes it too competitive. But that personal growth, I think, is what you're getting at, which is, mm-hmm. is really where it's at. What's the one consistent thing that you've seen in learning development along the way, the one practice that you've always kind of incorporated into your model that's worked regardless of where you've been at, that you could kind of leave as a lesson learned or a best practice for our listeners?
I wish I'd been doing this a lot longer than I have been. But I think the one thing that I've been doing, so in addition to really focusing on relationships, which we've talked about before, has been key. I keep a journal right now. So I've been keeping a journal at my the last couple of roles around, especially when you're building from nothing, what you're doing. And like, it makes it easier to replicate it later. But being a really honest and making it a really honest journal. So like, how did you procure technology? What was the process that you used? Why did you choose something over something else? What was the, even if you chose the something else, what was it lacking that you wish someone else had so you can keep looking for that thing? The next one is like, how did I develop the team? So in the case of Alto Pharmacy, I got a bunch of folks that maybe didn't have instructional design background, but were subject matter experts. At my job previous to this, I had a bunch of instructional designers and we had to learn the subject matter together. So how did I develop the team and what things did I use? Having a list of courses or certificates that I can use, different online things that are free that I can send them to. And then the last thing was about things that went south. So when things didn't go right, when, you know, I get a visit from a, you know, senior leader in the organization that there's a ton of mistakes in a particular area, what did I do to fix those? How did we recognize those? How could we have recognized those faster? So maybe we didn't train a bunch of people wrong for a little while. So that's what I would say is keep a journal of all the things that you did.
That's awesome. That's great advice. And thank you so much, Krista. You shared so much good knowledge and just best practices along the way. For all of our listeners who want to learn more about Alto Pharmacy, what's the address? Where could they learn more about Alto?
You can go to our website. It's alto.com and alto.pharmacy.com. Yeah, alto.com. And depending on where you live in the country, you can sign up to start getting your prescription sent to you. So alto.com, and then we have a mobile app as well, so you can start scheduling your prescriptions right away.
Okay, and for all of our listeners who want to learn more about you or some of the things that you're involved with on social media, where's the best way to keep in touch with you and to follow what you're up to?
I think probably the best place is probably LinkedIn. You can find me as Krista with a CH, Krista Peters, and obviously you can also search Alto Pharmacy and you'll find me there.
Very cool. And we'll keep both the links for Alto Pharmacy and for Krista's LinkedIn profile in the show notes so you can contact her or follow her on LinkedIn. And thank you for coming on the show, Krista, and sharing so much with us. And good luck with all the growth over there at Alto.
Thanks so much for having me.
And to all of our listeners, thank you for being here every week. As you know, we have a new episode that comes out each week. So wherever you're listening, be sure to subscribe, leave us ratings and comments. We love to hear from our listeners. And until our next episode, happy learning.